Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll. I'll make love to you.
Whether you like a mosque or don't like a mosque, you don't have to go. There's already another mosque down there within 4 blocks of the World Trade Center. There's porno places. There's fast food places. I mean, it's a vibrant community. It's New York.
Come along and be my hearty doll. Come along and be my hearty doll.
Let's pause the music. Now you're listening to a deranged human being. A billionaire? Apparently, yes. The mayor of New York? Apparently, yes. But a man whose thoughts are so deranged that he is a danger not only to himself but to the entire nation. Here is a man who in one breath not only insults Muslims, but says he's supporting Muslims because a mosque is just like a porno parlor or a fast food outlet. But everyone's entitled to have a fast food outlet or a pornography or go to a mosque. You don't like it, don't go. You don't like it, you don't go. That's all. You don't have to go. He doesn't even understand what he is saying. So he goes on a comedian show who doesn't write his own jokes, a comedian who went off the air when his smart writers went on strike. And then the comedian says something that also shows a drug-addled mind in clip 3.
Because I was thinking, and again, I don't know if you're going to support this or not, I would like to build a synagogue reform in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
You wonder why there's anti-Semitism, John? John, you wonder why Jews like you cause anti-Semitism, John? You can't figure it out? John Stewart, Mayor Bloomberg, two prizes of the Jewish religion. Two superb prizes of the Jewish religion. The man comes up with what he thinks is a parable to show you what happens when you use drugs for too long. His dumb writer writes, I was thinking I'd like to build a synagogue in St. Patrick's Cathedral and press the laugh line button. Now, not only is this idiotic and illogical, it's not funny. It is the product of inbreeding. It is only the product of inbreeding. How could you compare a joke to build a synagogue in St. Patrick's Cathedral to building a mosque on the ruins of the World Trade Center, which are ruined by Muslim fanatics? Are you implying that Jews want to blow up the St. Patrick's Cathedral, John? Is that your idea of interfaith dialogue? Now you understand why he's only a comedian and why the mayor is only a mayor. Now you understand the two things. Now you understand why your children get the kind of education they get, because they actually rely upon a comedy for their ideas. Here's a story you're not going to believe. Singing Happy Birthday has been outlawed in a Missouri grade school because it's insensitive. A Missouri elementary school tried to ban the singing of Happy Birthday in order to be sensitive about those students that might find singing in public to be offensive. School principal Jody Davidson said that the ban on singing Happy Birthday to you is not permitted due to the sensitivity of all student beliefs. So parents complained, and then she reversed course. And then she said, we have lots of students who celebrate birthdays on the same day, and we just don't want to have the loud chaos that happens in the cafeteria. So, in other words, she made up a lie, just like Maya Bloomberg's making up a lie, and the comedian doesn't even understand that his jokes aren't funny and don't make sense. As it turns out, the woman teacher behind this is a Jehovah's Witness, and apparently Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in singing Happy Birthday to you. So she's now trying to impose her religious beliefs upon the entire school system. The principal's own religion is that of Jehovah's Witness, and it's a faction that eschews birthday celebrations, so she's trying to push that into her school system. That has nothing directly to do with the mosque, but it just shows you what happens to a society that loses its roots in deductive logic or what we used to call reason. There seems to be a loss of reason in our society when you could have statements like this being made. When we know that the imam behind the mosque said that U.S. terrorism fostered Islamic terrorism, when he said that the U.S. is worse than Al-Qaeda, one thing after the other about this imam who turns out to be a hater of America, a hater of America, a double agent if I ever saw one in my opinion, and here we have him put forward by Bloomberg as a man of peace and a man of love. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think we've covered the mosque issue. 70 to 80% of Americans oppose the building of the mosque at Ground Zero. Even educated Muslims know that it will be a victory for Islamic terrorists who will see it only as a victory. And so, therefore, we are stuck with politically correct, or shall I say, mentally disturbed liberals who are pushing this, along with the fanatic Muslims who know that they're antagonizing most of America. And frankly, I've had enough of this. I don't even want to talk about it. Instead, I want a little more rock and roll. So let's play, I don't know, some new music, Beowulf, some new rock and roll. I take my call. On the Savage Nation, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. This or any other topic. We're listening to Come Softly to Me by the Fleetwoods. In fact, since it's Friday at the end of August already, is this the last Friday in August? Let me see the calendar. It's the last Friday in August. By next Friday, it's already September. I see that the children are already back in school. Most of them, I never went to school in August. I think they should go to school 12 months a year, personally. I never understood summer vacation. It was for harvest time. But who harvested, actually? Who harvested in the summer? Why'd they give them off the summer altogether to begin with? They needed them where, on the farm? The reason that we're a nation of dumb morons is that children learn nothing because they're off half the time. The other half the time they're in school, half the day is given over to teacher education or how to put a condom on a cucumber. John in Tennessee, welcome to the Savage Nation. John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, John?
Hey, I feel like I must be the only person alive who remembers that bin Laden told the world after 9/11 that the reason he did it is because he wants to start a global war between non-Muslims and Muslims. Fine, he's an idiot, he's a moron, he's a murderer. What makes me sick to my stomach is my fellow Americans are following his instructions and turning against innocent Muslim Americans and saying, you know, throw the Constitution out the window. I'm so mad at Muslims, I don't care what their rights are. And I'm thinking,
Hold on. You're trying to have it both ways. Opposing the Ground Zero Mosque is not opposing Islam. It's opposing the desecration of the World Center Trade Site, which is considered a graveyard by most individuals who understand what went on there.
Didn't you just say that Muslims will recognize this as a victory for terrorists?
Well, I said that the head of Al Arabiya Television said that. It was a Muslim himself, but he's an educated man. He said that it should not be built there, and he's a Muslim. He said because it will be recognized as a victory for the Islamists. But, you know, we can even go to your point. You said Osama bin Laden is a bad man, and we all know he is, and that he wanted hatred for Muslims to be metastasized around the globe. So then why are the developer and the imam, why are they pushing this when they know it's provoking anger and hatred?
Because they want Americans to be so mad that we forget our own Constitution. That's the joy of every terrorist, is when decent people say, I'm going to forget about the foundations of my country and the principles it's based on because I'm...
Yeah,
really,
I understand that. Nobody is saying you can't pray to Allah. There's a mosque four blocks away. But we are saying that the site itself should be preserved for a memorial. It is a graveyard to those who died to Islamic terrorism. I mean, they didn't die because they got cancer, did they? The trade centers came down because 19 Muslim fanatics blew airplanes into the buildings.
Absolutely. And if bin Laden could have picked anybody, he would have picked Muslims just to incite fury by the rest of the world.
I understand. So Ahmadinejad is exactly like bin Laden. Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of Iran, is on the course to developing a nuclear weapon if he already doesn't have one. And he said when he gets it, he's going to use it to wipe Israel off the map. And he doesn't care if half of Iran is killed, half of the Iranians are killed when he does it. And the reason he's doing it is because, according to the psychopath head of Iran, in order for the 12th, the 13th, I forget which, Mahdi, whatever that is, in order for him to arrive, the unknown Mahdi to arrive, I guess that's some kind of saint to him, there must be total chaos and an apocalypse on the planet. The man is a certifiable danger to world stability. Tell me why that makes sense.
The remedy is for Americans to act like Americans, not get a mob mentality and get angry when they can't even figure out what they're angry about.
Well, no, they're angry. They're angry for good reason. They're angry over the fact that a few agitators who are going to make a fortune on this mosque by acquiring the money from foreign sources, or in fact, by acquiring the money through public financing. It turns out the Ground Zero Muslim Center may get public financing. Did you know that?
I did know that. And
you did know that. The Muslim Center planned near the site of the World Trade Center could qualify for tax-free financing, a spokesman for Mayor Bloomberg said. So, in other words, there's big money involved here, and they're putting their greed and their desire to agitate ahead of peace between the religions. That's how I see it.
I love your show. I appreciate the voice you put out there. But as for me...
All right, thank you, but you disagree. You'd like to see a mosque on the Ground Zero itself. I think we should go a step further then. Why build it two blocks away or across the street? Why not let him build a mosque from the ground up? That's as tall as the World Trade Center. Let him build one with spires that go 50 stories into the air. Wouldn't that be multicultural? 1-800-449-8255. Again, let me reiterate for you so you finally understand it. Islam is practiced in over 100 mosques in New York. There's a mosque a few blocks away. The reason these agitators want the mosque near Ground Zero is so that it can be seen as a victory shrine for the Islamists who attacked us. Make no mistake about it. Don't believe the liberal, multicultural, double talk that's been fed down your brain. That's why 70% of Americans oppose it, because intuitively they're better people than you would think. And the liberals are on the wrong side of history. The average American is on the right side of history. I'll be back.
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Whoa-oh-oh-oh-oh. Let's go strolling. There's a girl in my heart.
You know, there's an ex-CIA employee named Michael Scheuer who actually headed up the Osama... Can you shut the sound off? He's an ex-CIA official, a real one, as opposed to the deadbeats who sit around and look at child porn on the computers. And the former CIA employee, Michael Scheuer, who actually headed up the Osama bin Laden tracking unit, is calling Mayor Bloomberg a windbag who just wants Muslim votes. That's right. Former CIA employee, Michael Scheuer, who headed up the Osama bin Laden tracking unit, blasts New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg for backing the Ground Zero Mosque. He criticizes U.S. counterterrorism efforts, especially those involving the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he says that the windbag New York City mayor just wants Muslim votes. He knows what he's talking about, okay? He doesn't have to go on a comedian show to understand the danger we're in and who our enemy actually is. That's the end of the story. I'm offended. I'm offended by Bloomberg. I'm offended by Stewart. They are a disgrace to the Jewish people. They turn people, ordinary people, into anti-Semites with their low-class, twisted logic, in my opinion. And if you don't like it, write somebody about it. Mark in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I think it's imperative that you play the Mayor Bloomberg and John Stewart recording at least every 18 minutes on tonight's show and throw it in the high holidays for the Jewish faith. I, as a Jew, am ashamed of these two self-hating Jews who happen to be cowards. And this is you hit it right on the money. When two of these people come out and make statements like this and talk the way they do, it creates anti-Semitism from people who never knew Jews or who are they, or what they're about. These
right.
people, I'm ashamed.
That's right. When John Stewart tells a joke that was written for him by another idiot who says, I was thinking I'd like to build a synagogue in St. Patrick's Cathedral, you could hear the brain, the gears turning in his head, the bad joke, and then the audience laughs on cue. Is that not funny? I mean, it's crazy to say a thing like that.
It is crazy.
Not only is he insulting Muslims, he's insulting Jews and Christians. It's not funny.
Correct. It is not funny. Now, my people came from Kiev, the Ukraine, and Russia. My people knew how to fight. They knew how to defend themselves. They left Russia because they escaped the pogroms. When they came to the United States, they were not communists. They were Jews and they were business people. Guys like this Bloomberg and Stewart, they've got this component in them that they're communists, they're left-wing, anything goes, and they're ashamed of being Jews themselves.
But did you hear what Bloomberg said in the beginning? Listen to clip two. Listen to this insanity. Play this.
Whether you like a mosque or don't like a mosque, you don't have to go. There's already another mosque down there within four blocks of the World Trade Center. There's porno places. There's fast food places. I mean, it's a vibrant community. It's New York.
Do you have any idea what this schmuck just said, Mark? Do you realize he compared a mosque to a pornography parlor?
He's an absolute idiot. He has no sense of what's happening in the world. He has no street smarts. He may be a billionaire, but that doesn't mean anything when it comes down to the final analysis, especially what's going on in today's world. This man is out of touch.
Well, let's go to the next step. You know that we disclosed on Wednesday on the Savage Nation that it was his business interests that were expanding in the Middle East that are the animus for most of his mosque-loving behavior. You heard that show on Wednesday?
I did hear that show. It's an interesting point, and it couldn't hurt for you to mention it again.
No, what I'd like to know is why that story didn't get wider exposure on Fox News. Well, it's 18% owned by a Saudi prince. Why it didn't get wider exposure on NBC? Well, that's got huge, big interest in the Muslim world. In other words, at this point, the American media is so compromised by Muslim money that they bury stories like this, because the very same reason that Bloomberg is a mosque lover, the mosque at Ground Zero in particular, is the same reason that General Electric, NBC, and Fox News has basically backed off from this story. They also have expansionist interests in Arab countries. That's it, plain and simple.
You're absolutely right, and it's imperative, Michael, that you continue to bring this out to the attention of the public. Somebody somewhere down the line in one of the major media companies, maybe somebody at Fox, is going to pick up on this. It is absolutely necessary.
I doubt it. I think the lipstick girls have been told to button it up.
Savage.
Well, bebop Lula, she's my baby. Bebop Lula, I don't mean
because I was thinking, and again, I don't know if you're going to support this or not, I would like to build a synagogue reform in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
This is why anti-Semitism is flaring throughout America. It's men like Bloomberg and Stewart who don't even understand that they are flaring up a distaste for this type of liberal Judaism. Now, here's another story to show you what has happened to America, how it has become nothing but Swiss cheese owing to liberalism. Ex-Army analyst from Oklahoma, arrested at Minnesota airport, says the jerk headline from the Associated Press. So what did they mean by that? Why don't they tell you the whole story? That's not the headline. It's a man of Chinese descent was flying from Minnesota to China to give away military secrets, but the AP hides it so that you remain in the dark. A former U.S. Army analyst from Oklahoma was arrested in Minneapolis while trying to board a one-way flight to China with electronic files containing a restricted Army field manual, authorities said Friday. Now you have to read to the next paragraph. Who has time for this? Federal prosecutors said Yang Qian Yang, 26, also known as Alfred Yang of Lawton, Oklahoma, allegedly was carrying multiple data storage devices when he was arrested Thursday at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Yang was charged with one count of theft of government property, carries a maximum sentence of 1 year in prison. So that's the story. Riddled because of liberalism, riddled like Swiss cheese. Could be that people noticed what he was doing because Yang worked as an analyst at Oklahoma's Fort Sill when his clearance was revoked due to security violations, but they didn't arrest him. Espionage. But now they got the lawyers, the Bloomberg types. You know, you get the drift. The Bloomberg types. Oh, what's a file? You know, we're a new world order. You don't like the file? What's the difference? It's only defense secrets. It doesn't matter. We're all one world. I have a Bloomberg Enterprise opening in Shanghai. And I like dim sum. You get it? Do you understand what we are facing here? that these weaklings, these mental weaklings, do not even understand the danger this little nation is facing. Yes, this little nation. We are now a little nation. Oh, we still have submarines, and we have strategic bombers, and we have guided missile cruisers, and this and that. But they're worthless. The reason they're worthless is because men with Swiss cheese for their souls are in charge of using these weapons. Witness what is being done to the great American military by Defense Secretary Gates, who spends his every day trying to denigrate the military and run the military off the rails. In other words, he was told by Obama, hey, you know what, where I come from, you know what, wow, what's one military and another? So we wear a U.S. flag and then wear a red star. What's the difference? It's all military to me. Cut it down by 20%. Get rid of those guys. What do you call them, Marines? We don't need Marines anymore. And by the way, we're going to Martha's Vineyard to eat lobster and drink champagne. And she's going to eat ice cream cones. Then we'll come back and talk about health food. And by the time I'm back from my vacation playing golf with Mayor Bloomberg, I want 20% of the military cut. Because you know why? One military is as good as the other. We're all friends now. You know what I mean? That's the world you're living in. Now, who's going to save you? Who's going to save you when push comes to shove? Who's in charge? Who is at the helm of this country? Who is at the helm of the United States military? Who is at the helm of the FBI? Who is at the helm of the CIA? Take a look around you. Take a look around yourself and ask yourself if you feel safer under Obama or you feel more endangered under Obama. Ask yourself. If you feel safer as a result of multiculturalism and the flood of unloyal immigrants who have flooded into America, or you feel less safe from the flood of disloyal immigrants who have come into this country and spit on the flag. Now you say, oh, that's stirring up animosity toward the poor immigrant. That's demagoguery. Then ask yourself why the Mexicans wave Mexican flags at sporting events and will not even wave an American flag in this country. That's because of weaklings like you who think that that's a sign of strength when in fact it's a sign of your weakness and their strength. See, it's a sign of strength to them to wave a Mexican flag at a sporting event. And it's a sign of weakness that you don't even understand that the American flag is what should be shown at a sporting event, not a Mexican flag or Yugoslavian flag or a Russian flag. This is America, my friends. This is not the United Nations. This is not the United Nations, it's the United States of America. I never wanted to live in the UN. My grandfather didn't flee oppression 100 years ago in Russia so that I could live in a UN run by a bunch of, to this country where there was freedom. The very freedom that I'm enjoying right now. And that's what we're fighting for. To make sure that these Swiss cheese souls, like Bloomberg, don't destroy us entirely. You understand what I'm saying to you? All right, let's move on. I really don't want to do this this mosque thing anymore. You have a few calls hanging up there on it. We'll do it. But believe me, you haven't heard the last of this because every day more sound seeps out about the imam. Listen, for example, to what he said about the U.S.
Definition of terrorism. The military historian, the American military historian Caleb Carr, in his excellent book called The Lessons of Terror, defines terrorism as the targeting of civilian non-combatants in order to achieve specific political objectives. And he points out that every country in the world has done this from the time of the Romans.
So this is Imam Rauf now saying we're a terrorist nation. And now listen to clip 8. You'll hear about the peaceful imam that loves Bloomberg and Bloomberg loves him. Listen
to
8.
The perception in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, is that Western states have engaged in this definition of terrorism, that the desire to have or to achieve certain political objectives has made them allow or made them not feel troubled by the loss of innocent Muslim lives, calling it, you know, damage collateral to their political objectives.
All right, shut this liar off. I can't take it anymore. I may as well be listening to Goebbels with a Muslim British accent. This lying SOB is lying from the top of his brain to the bottom of his dirty little feet. He's saying that we killed more Muslims than anyone else. He knows nothing about Muslims killing Muslims around the globe. He knows nothing about the fear that moderate, middle-of-the-road Muslims fear from people like him and those he claims he is not a part of. Ask the Algerians what they think about radical Islam. Ask the Moroccans what they think about radical Islam. Ask the Lebanese about what Muslims have done to Christians and to each other. You ask anybody about the number of Muslims killed on this planet, and you will come to understand that more Muslims have died at the hand of other Muslims than from all the Christians put together in the last century and this century combined. But that would require thought. That would require a knowledge of history. That wouldn't require a pot-smoking comedian getting a quick, dirty laugh with a mayor who doesn't even deserve his name being spoken again. And so it's a contemptible situation that we live in when Goebbels Jr. is allowed to come to this country and build a temple in this country, a temple against the will of the 70% of the people. A temple to what? A temple to division? A temple to hatred? A temple to drive one religion against another? Because that's what he has done. With a little help from Bloomberg and the stupid left-wing comedians in the American media. That's your Mr. Ralph. And so there it is. He talks about terrorism. And he says that we are the terrorist nation. And you know, when you have an impasse like this, it's called war. When one side says you're the terrorist and this side says you're the terrorist, eventually what happens is the two sides go to war. And yet we're told now that the man spreading that gospel of hatred against America is a man of peace, a man who wants to bring the races together. We're told his wonderful wife, Daisy Khan, who is as uncompromising as they come. She won't submit to anyone's opinion. It's only her opinion. I want that mosque and I want it built there, she says, and you're not going to stop me. And anyone who stops me is a bigot. Anyone who opposes the mosque is an anti-Semite on steroids. Anyone who opposes the mosque is un-American, she says. Therefore, Nancy Pelosi jumps in, the genius herself, and she says that we should conduct an investigation of all those who oppose the mosque. So the Democrat Party now joins the fanatics and says that they want a McCarthy-like witch hunt of all those who oppose the mosque. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very important case. I realize it's the end of August. I realize many of you don't want to hear it anymore. It's Friday afternoon. It's Friday evening. It's Monday morning. It's Tuesday afternoon. Wherever the show is played or whenever it's played, you have to understand how important this is. And one of the reasons this is still ongoing is because it is not over yet. It came out today, as I said to you earlier, that these people are in it not only to promote hatred, not only to go back to their home countries and show a great trophy of victory that they built a mosque literally on the ashes of 9/11, but now they're going to use public funds to do it. Turns out that they found a way through Bloomberg to use public funds to build the Ground Zero Victory Mosque. The Muslim Center, they're calling it. Now it's a center. Plan near the site of the World Trade Center could qualify for tax-free financing, a spokesman for Bloomberg said today. And his spokesman is willing to consider approving the public subsidy. The Democratic Comptroller's spokesman, Scott Sieber, another super prize of humanity, said that they support the project. It says, if it turns out to be financially feasible, and if they can demonstrate an ability to pay off the bonds and comply with the laws concerning tax-exempt financing, we'd certainly consider it, said Mayor Bloomberg's spokesmouth Sieber. Now, the mosque's backers hope to raise a total of $70 million in tax-exempt debt in order to build the mosque. Tax laws allow such funding, listen to this, for religiously affiliated nonprofits if they can prove the facility will benefit the general public and their religious activities are funded separately. The general public. Now, wouldn't the general public include Christians, some of whom eat pork? Wouldn't the general public include the large Chinese community in the lower Manhattan who love pork and other such products? I would say that if these fine examples of humanity who are behind the mosque would agree to permit a Chinese deli that hang various products from the butcher shop in their product of their products in the public center, I would say it would benefit the community at large. Did you hear what I just said? tax laws allow such funding for religiously affiliated nonprofits if they can prove the facility will benefit the general public and that their religious activities are funded separately, separation of church and state. So in other words, how can you justify, how can you state for a moment that this mosque, which is being masked inside a community center, a public center, will benefit the general public, when in fact you know that the very same Muslims who are behind this would say no to the sale of any pork or pork products in such a general public center. So now you understand that there's big money behind all of this. We showed you and disclosed on the Savage Nation this week the connection to the Middle East that Bloomberg has. His expansion of the Bloomberg Empire in the Arab Muslim world goes on. This is all tied into his desire to placate his friends in the Middle East. And where is Bloomberg today? His story is on Michael Savage from the New York Post. He had nothing better to do that now he's done such a good job of dividing America, but to fly in his private jet up to Martha's Vineyard to go golfing with the other genius, Pinocchio. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, love, love it, darling. Come and go with me. Don't let me way beyond the sea. I need you, darling. So come go with me.
All right, it's a little rock and roll Friday now. I mean, I've said my piece. I've said all I want to say today. You want to call on it, you can. It's open mic to Mike Friday. If you want to talk about the mosque madness and Bloomberg's desire to placate his business partners in the Middle East and the hateful imam behind it and all of that, if you want to do that, go ahead. But, you know, of all the things I've done this week, you know what I get the most feedback on? I don't get a lot of feedback. I don't take emails, by the way. I did for years. I get 1,500 a day. I had an employee who would spend half a day, at least a half a day going through it. Most of it's junk mail and hate mail. We don't even get, I don't care what you, you know, send me an email. I don't want to hear what you, you know, say about me. Get your own show if you don't like it. You know, that's all I feel about it. Otherwise, have the guts to call 1-800-449-8255 and debate me. That's all. Don't send a hateful little email and don't be a little, you know, cyber bully with your hate on the internet because it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, as you well know. No one reads that crap. It has no impact. That's why you have no money. So you spend all your time writing a little hate mail on the email on the net. Who reads that garbage? You're like a little girl, most of you, with the clicking. All you're doing is clicking your little hatred. You're like a little girl. You can't make a living, so you sit home clicking your hatred because you didn't become Dostoevsky, most of you. What I get the most calls about is the story I told about going up to the Catskill Mountains when I was a kid with my father with the rope on a DeSoto with the canvas. People love that story. So I think I'll tell the story again. No, I told it this week. It was very interesting. But I actually embellished it a little more because it's the end of the summer. So let's say it's the end of the summer, the last week in September and August. And now it's the end of the summer. We have to go back to the Bronx because the kids have to be in school like next week. So now it's sad. It's the end of the summer. It rained up in the mountains. The summer's over. The kids hated August. It was like gloomy. July was like, oh, the summer's still a whole summer. You know what a summer is to a child. It's an eternity. Late June was the halcyon days. They were the most beautiful because you had the whole summer. July was gorgeous. And once in a while as a kid, you'd let the idea that August was going to come soon enter your mind. It's like thinking you're going to die. The thought of going back to blackboards and chalk and teachers with toilet water that gave you a migraine headache that you could puke from. So August would come and go and then rain a little. And you knew you were already going back to the slum. So now comes August. Dad comes up from the city. This is now you're packing up to go home. Now here comes the DeSoto already from New York. And there's the big, I don't know why he bought a DeSoto. I think taxi drivers used them. He heard it was a great car. They don't even make it anymore. DeSoto, by the way, was a vicious conquistador. You don't know about that. You hear the language of the Hispanics is Spanish. It isn't. It's a language of conquest and imperialism, incidentally. That's the sad part. I mean, the language of the people south of the border with America is various native languages, Indian language and so Mayan, Aztec tongues. Spanish was imposed upon them by the conquerors like DeSoto, but I don't want to bore you with the details. I'll have people who say, oh, I'm proud of my Hispanic heritage. It's not your heritage. It's the heritage of conquest. That's all. Spanish imposed it upon you. Proper language to speak, if you're really interested in your heritage, would be the Mayan dialect if you're from that region. That's why Mel Gibson did that great movie. Remember that great movie? What was the name of it, Beowulf? Do you remember it? It was Apocalypto. I love that movie. Done in the Mayan language. I mean, whatever you think about Mel Gibson and his treatment of women, the man is a heck of an actor and movie director. And the brilliant chance he took with that movie in the dialect of Mayan. So, anyway, we're going home. And he puts the rope again. Now, we're not just... See, I'm a boater. But nobody in my family ever went on a boat. They didn't even go on rowboats. They were so afraid of the water. These were landlocked people from Eastern Europe. The idea of water was alien to them. The closest they came to water were whitefish and pike. I think that's the closest they ever came to actual seeing water. Now, where I get the water from, I don't know, but the idea of how to handle ropes and lines, I think I got from my father, and I don't know where he got it from. But when he would secure the line, the rope, on the rack on top of the DeSoto, over the luggage and the goods that we were taking back to New York, literally that car could have turned over on Highway 17 on the way back, God forbid. If the car had turned over and everybody in it had been thrown out on the highway, and it was upside down with the wheels spinning, they would find all of the goods intact. Nothing would have broken. Not a dish would have broken. He put the goods ahead of the family in a certain way. Goods were precious because he dealt in goods. The dog would have got flung out of the window probably and lived. He would have wound up eating a hot dog somewhere in the Red Apple Rest. But the goods, I guarantee you, could have been resold a week later because of the way he secured it with those... The ropes and the knots and the triple knots and the line. I don't know how he learned it. I don't have any idea. For a landlocked guy, God bless him, Dad. I have a picture of him, by the way, right over me in the studio with a picture of my dear brother next to him and Fats Domino next to them. next to them. So he's over. Here he is standing here looking at me right from the little bungalow colony with the undershirt. The dead ringer for an actor I know. I forget the actor. All right, God bless.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill, when I found you.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. I hope you're enjoying what you've heard so far. And I'm going to begin somewhere in the 14th century with something that you're not going to understand where this is coming from initially, so bear with me. Then they carried in his shield, striped with bright red, a pentangle star painted pure gold, shown at its center. He swings it by the belt, then tosses it across his neck, and the sign of that star, its perfect points fitted. That prince, and I'll tell you how, though it hold up this tale, Solomon shaped that star, triangles blended in triangles, as a symbol of truth, for each of its angles enfolds the other, and fastens the other, five. In all and everywhere endless, and everywhere in England called the infinite knot, and Gawain wears it by right on his bright armor, faithful five ways and each way five times, a noble knight, as pure as gold, as good as any knight in any gleaming castle, and worthy of that star, the noblest of men, in asking and telling the hardest for words to baffle. His five senses were free of sin. His five fingers never failed him. And all his earthly hope was in Christ's five wounds on the cross, as our creed tells us. And whenever he stood in battle, his mind was fixed above all things on the five joys which Mary had of Jesus, from which all his courage came, and was why this fair knight had her face painted inside his shield to stare at heaven's queen and keep his courage high. And the fifth of his fives was love and friendship, for other men, and freedom from sin, and courtesy that never failed, and pity, greatest of knightly virtues. And these noble five were the firmest of all in his soul, and all these fives met in one man, joined to each other, each without end, set in five perfect points, wholly distinct, yet part of one whole, and that whole seamless, each angle open and closed, wherever it end or began. And so the pentangle glowed on his shield, bright red gold across bright red stripes, the holy pentangle, as careful scholars call it. And Gawain was ready, and his lance steady, in front of him, wished them all farewell, and then rode from that hall. Now I'll stop right there. If I were in charge of education for the United States military, I would read to them from some of these old English stories, including this 14th century story called Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Instead of reading them from the politically correct books that have weakened our military and turned them into nannies, needing nannies and drugs and medication, sending our boys out into harm's way on Valium, I would read from them from these great, great works of literature. I'd read from them from the Holy Bible. And I would send them off to battle, knowing that they're fighting for a good cause. Instead, we have Swiss cheese at the top of the chain. And so there it is, a little piece of something, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. I have no idea why I brought this to work today, other than to share it with you. I wanted to speak with you about how to be a mighty holy knight, the meaning of the pentangle, and the greatest of knightly virtues. Pity is the greatest of knightly virtues. I don't know if you know that. Many of you don't understand that pity is the greatest of knightly virtues, and that's something that is generally shown only by American troops. Many of you don't know that we have the most compassionate troops on the planet. You compare them to troops who have never taught what compassion is, the way they treat women, the way they treat children, the way they treat each other, the way they treat those soldiers from the opposite army that they capture. Compare them to the compassionate American troops, and you'll understand why you live in such a great nation. Now cast aside what the vermin on the left, the drug addicts, say about America. Cast aside what these America haters say, because in the long scope of history, my personal feeling is that they will be swept aside and never be heard from shortly in the future. That's my gut feeling. I have a vision of America as well. And that vision is expected. And America is saved from the evils of the earth. How it will come, where it will come from, I do not know. But I believe all of these boll weevils and lice that we have been listening to, that we are forced to listen to on a daily basis, will be swept aside like the bugs that they are, and that men will stand up again. And they'll stand up not only for their own race and their own religion and their own nation, but they'll stand up for goodness itself. And we will no longer be plagued by the lice and the vermin who have eaten us alive like bugs on a corpse. The Gawain poet is what I'm talking about. I read in the introduction, his sensibility is both delicate and powerful, as is his language. He can sing like a choir boy or like an angry blacksmith. He can draw characters so vividly that they breathe. He can paint pictures so vitally that one sees them, almost feels them. He can weave a compelling and tightly organized plot out of disparate and sometimes fragile elements. He can be passionately moral. He can be wickedly comic. And so I am telling you that even in the 14th century, there was English literature that did things like this. And I do not know whether all of this is lost at this time to the world that we live in. All I know is this. To the Hebrew, the word is the deed. Solomon shaped that star, triangles blended in triangles, as a symbol of truth. And on that note, on truth itself, I pause and I try to make the transition to today's radio show. I realize that this is so obscure that many of you will think that you're listening to the wrong station. You'd rather talk about the news of the day, and we've done that, and we will do it again. But at some point, you have to take a very deep breath, and you have to drink in the air itself. You have to let yourself drift back into your own subconscious and into your own memories and your own history and the history of your nation, the history of your language itself, until you finally arrive at a place that is both beautiful and safe, a place that is no longer to be seen anywhere on television, anywhere in the movies, anywhere from a public official's mouth. Once in a while, we get a glimpse of this world, and this world is still within us. I'll be right back.
Savage.
worth fighting for, Western civilization. Think of this world if the light of Western civilization is allowed to die because of the left-wing scum who have been trying to kill it for over 50 years. Think of a world without opera. Think of a world without Saint-Saëns. Think of the world without Mozart. Think of the wonderful contributions from all of the other wonderful cultures on the earth. Think of the wonderful baskets that you'll have. You'll be doing basket weaving. Just think of that. Just think about the basket weaving you'll be doing after you've killed Western civilization. You morons, you fools, you psychopaths who hate this country. You haven't even any idea what it is you're trying to kill. You're suicidal. Take a look at your lifestyles. Anyway, I made my point. Sometimes it just comes up from the depth, and I have to get it out of myself. I figure it's late August. I'm allowed to do it. Last night, I had a strange dream again. But this was a stranger one than all. Not stranger. It was more realistic in one way and out of the blue in another way. I have no idea why. I dreamed I was in a street singing opera to passerbys. I have no idea why. And I thought when I woke up, I said, well, wait a minute. You go on the radio every day. You have a voice that like is very much like a singer in some ways. Many people have thought you should sing. And yet here I was, almost an itinerant singer, singing in the street for the entertainment of strangers, the attention of strangers, as it were. And it didn't feel bad. It felt good. I don't understand the dream totally, but sometimes I wish I could pause from the radio career, take a deep breath, take singing lessons, and start singing amateur opera. And I may do it someday. Maybe I should do it right now. I don't know why I have to wait. What am I waiting for? So on that note, I'll take some callers. Let's start with Bernie, New York, WOR. Bernie, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. It's funny you mention that because your voice has the cadence of a singer. I mean, it's not monotone, and it lends itself to when you tell the stories, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm from New York. You're from New York. We're the same age. And you just paint these pictures, which brings me back, you know. You told a story, I don't know if it was your father or some other guy in the neighborhood, about he had the workbench in the basement. You remember that?
Yes, that was my father's workbench. It's funny, you talk about psychic. I went in my own basement today, and I pulled out tools my father had given me. Old steel hard-forged steel tools that I keep oiled and everything, like an old wrench. You can't believe the workmanship on this thing. And I showed it to a young guy. He was amazed at the instruments. These are over probably 100 years old.
It's fantastic. Do you remember Gene Shepard's program on WOR in New York in the evening?
You know, people compare. I never listened to him. I know he was wonderful and people loved him, but I don't remember the man. I know people say, is he an influence? Truthfully, I never heard him. I never heard the guy. I really don't know who he is. I mean, I heard he was great and blah, blah, blah. Gloria, New York, WR. What's on your mind, Gloria?
I find it hard to come in on this story because when you started to tell that one about the star, that overwhelmed me. I mean, I was going to ask you about your father's store on Ludlow
Right,
Street.
But you don't know where I came up with that story, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight from 14th century English literature is the point. Why I brought it up at this point, at this stage of today's show, is another question.
Took me back to when I went to school. That's what we had. That's what we were fed. They're not fed that today.
That's correct. You were taught English literature because it ennobled you. It made you a bigger, better person. When you compare it to the filth that they put in our children's heads today, garbage. It's all sexual driven. It's all gobbledygook about getting along with everybody when, in fact, this getting along with everybody is really teaching them to be weaklings who should be stepped on. That's not what you teach children. Of course you want them to get along with everybody, but you teach them to get along with everybody through strength, not through weakness. There's a big difference between strength, compassion, and pity, and being a pitiful creature. But go teach that to the children today. It's almost impossible. And that's why so many of them become either completely lost and drug addicts or complete bullies altogether, because they don't know how to react to what they're being taught. If they were taught, for example, how the ancient English knights were trained on the field, not only in the use of weapons, that's a given, we understand that, but they're also trained in the virtues of being a knight. And what are the virtues? What's the principal virtue of being a knight? It was considered pity. Of course, I don't agree with the translation of the word pity. I think they really meant compassion. Okay? So, in other words, a knight, a true warrior of the ancients, was taught not only to be a great man in battle, but also a great man in spirit and a great man, a noble man, in other words. And what was the greatest virtue of a noble man? They said pity. That was the greatest of the virtues, because anybody can kill. Anybody can learn to kill. Look at our society today with the animals. They're held up as role models, idiots, the idiots they show on television. Everyone gruff with the big muscles. I can kill you. I can beat you out. I'll knock you around. That's not great. That's nothing. It's lower than an animal. An animal doesn't behave that way. But go and show the manly virtues associated with the noble virtues. When have you last seen that portrayed in the media? Like never. Never, maybe in a children's fable they would teach it. I don't even know. I don't watch children's fables. But what I'm getting at is that we need to teach our children things like this. So on that note, without getting too off the base and too highfalutin, and everyone will say, where are you coming from? Why are you doing this? What are you trying to prove? I think I'm going to tell you about a fly in my radio studio and the midget in the Florida hotel. This is from my book, Psychological Nudity. I wrote it years ago. It's not a money thing for me, but I want to just read you some of the story today because it's so... There's a fly in the studio. I'd like to kill it, but I'm the kind of guy who lets flies out of a window, if I can. There's no window here, no screen. I just want to kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. They're always buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. A bee I don't mind as much as a fly. A bee doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone, by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father, may he rest in peace, taught me a trick. It's an old European trick. You take an undershirt off your body. You swing it overhead. You ever seen the old men do that years ago? There's no old men left anymore. Where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. Old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 until death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth, and can be sexually aroused until they go into the coffin. In my day, you got old and that was the end of it. They were old younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 80. I don't know how it happened. In those days, they died younger, at 50, 55, a lot of them. Ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take vitamins, never dieted. You can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. Have I told you the story of the thieving midget in the Seedy Hotel in Florida 25 years ago? The reason I'm laughing is because this story in my book was taken directly from a radio transcript and slightly edited to make it, you know, a little more coherent. But it's very much like Tristram Shandy. From 1759, Lawrence Stern's book, not in the sense of talking about a fly or a midget in a Florida hotel. He invented the stream of consciousness technique that we now call it. Of course, that was originally invented by the Bible, which is all stream of consciousness. Whether you're reading Leviticus or any of the others, it's stream of consciousness. And then I went down to the river, and I saw the woman by the river, and the woman saw the river of the Moses, and Moses saw the river of the woman. And the woman and Moses went up to the hill, and they went up to the hill, and they saw the lantern. And when they saw the lantern on the hill, the parable was such that I was certain that one day there would be a hot dog stand on Battery Street that would be converted into a Chinese delicatessen, and eventually that Chinese delicatessen would become a porno parlor that a certain mayor would one day compare to a holy place, holy in the Muslim world.
Savage.
All right, so I gave you a little piece of English literature from the 14th century because I figure on a late Friday in late August, I'm allowed to try this once in a while. Okay, we know about Tea Party. We know about Ground Zero Muslim Center. We know about the racket involved with it, with the money, with the public financing. We know Bloomberg's for it because of the expansionist desires of the Bloomberg Empire. We know all of this. So now let's go on to something more interesting. So we've covered English literature in a brief segment. Now I want to cover some Hebrew literature in English. Just listen for a minute. And tell me if you disagree with this. Rabbi Bendoza said, anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. But anyone whose wisdom comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. Now, I could spend an hour talking about that. I can learn from it myself. It taught me something just now when I read it. So I'll read it again, okay? Because you never hear this stuff. Unless you're a very religious person who reads this and hears about it in a formal setting, you will not hear it. Anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. But anyone whose wisdom comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. So now let's play Mayor Bloomberg talking about a mosque and a porno shop in the same breath. Play it.
Whether you like a mosque or don't like a mosque, you don't have to go. There's already another mosque down there within four blocks of the World Trade Center. There's porno places. There's fast food places. I mean, it's a vibrant community. It's New York.
So he is the fool according to Hebrew scripture itself. Anyone whose fear of sin comes before his wisdom will endure. Obviously, he has no fear of sin. He's Mayor Bloomberg. He fears nothing. But anyone whose wisdom, he has the wisdom with the way of making money, comes before his fear of sin, his wisdom will not endure. So I can tell you right now, at the end of his days, he's going to be seen as a laughingstock. Did you hear what I just said? At the end of his days, and he should live to the age of Moses, he will be seen as a laughingstock who went out on a limb and made himself into the biggest fool of all time. You also look at a thing like this. Pray for the welfare of the government. Pray for the welfare of the government that is taught. For were it not for the fear of it, men would swallow one another alive. That's an interesting statement. That's from a holy book in the Jewish tradition. It's taught in the prayer book. The Jewish people pray for the welfare of the government. For were it not for the fear of it, men would swallow one another alive. Now, would you expect to hear that from Michael Savage? Well, maybe you don't know what to expect from me. That's good. That's very good. Keep listening, because what you're about to hear may help you. Another rabbi wrote, who is wise? He who learns from every person. Did you hear that? Who is wise? He who learns from every person. So I was the kind of young man who wherever I went, I would meet people. They could be a bum. Sometimes I would talk to a bum in the street and I'd learn something. I think I once met either a reincarnation of Moses or God himself on this earth. I told a story only once in my 16 years on the radio. I'll tell it again. It's very simple. I was in North Beach, San Francisco. And there was an old man with a white beard and white hair. Okay, you talk about symbolism and obvious symbolism. And he had a rucksack. He was not really filthy, but he was not dressed like a middle-class person in any way. But he was not disheveled like a bum. And I stopped him, and we got to talk. I looked in his deep, penetrating blue eyes, and I remember I came down to this. I said to him, what is your name? He said, my name is Moshe, which means Moses. So I said to him, do you believe in God? And he turned and looked really searingly into me. And he said, why do you think I created myself? And that was the end of the statement. One statement. Always the simplest answer sometimes cuts right through you. That's the end of the whole thing. Don't tell me about National Geographic with the comets and the proof that that you came from a bug and a piece of... Please, don't give me that rubbish. That's a theory. That's scientific theory. And you're talking to a very educated scientist. Please don't count now on a comedian on television to tell you that I don't know what I'm talking about. He does. The genius who went to the High School of Performing Arts smoked dope since he's 4 years old. It's a scientific theory like any other about all of the rest of it. So he said to me, did I create myself? So I gave him a ride. I said, can I drop you off somewhere? I remember I had an old Volkswagen at the time, I think, or a Volvo. I don't know what it was. Yes, he said, I'm going south. So I took him to a freeway underpass. He got off. He got onto the freeway overpass, you know, the on-ramp, and he waved goodbye, and that was the end of it. He disappeared into the night. Now, I never saw him again. What does it mean? Just a stranger in the night. It means nothing. It means nothing. But I learned from him. Who is wise, he who learns from every person. I remember when I was very young, I once met a preacher in the streets of New York and Lower Manhattan. And he was one of these really great street preachers, white guy, a real holy roller. I think he was a Baptist. And I was taken in by this man's incredible voice and his passion. And again, we started to talk. And I said to him, can I give you a ride? That's right. Then I had the Volkswagen, the green Volkswagen. And he said, sure, take me uptown. I'm going to Harlem. I'm going to my church in Harlem. It's an all-black church. And I don't know whether he was the pastor. I don't think so. I think he was a member. I walked into that place, and I saw the Holy Spirit. I saw the Spirit. I felt it the same way I felt it in St. Patrick's Cathedral on Christmas Eve, the same way I have felt it at 777 Eastern Parkway in New York when 5,000 black-clad Jewish men met the Sabbath. I have felt it the same way inside a straw hut in a Fijian village one dark night as we sat around drinking kava kava until the latest time of until all hours of the night, and the men were chanting, and I became one of the men. The men became one with me. I felt it many times. Feel the Holy Spirit. It's there. Maybe this is too preachy for you. I don't really know. But sometimes you got to let it all out. You got to let the genie out of the bottle. After all, people say, how the heck do you do this every day? What motivates you? Why do you get up and do it? I don't have a direct answer for you other than the Spirit must be heard, and then you decide from yourself what the Spirit that you just heard told you. Now, finally, before I conclude this little sanctimonious segment of the radio show today, I want to read you something that is very important because not all religions are equal. I know Mayor Bloomberg thinks that pornography shops are equal to some religions and doesn't even understand he's insulting the very people he claims to be helping. That shows you the intelligence level of this man who fears nothing because his ego is so vast. I want to read you from the Jewish holy book on a wife of excellence where a woman is glorified. Many of you don't understand that the religious teachings of Jews glorifies the wife. You don't know that because the haters on the left who hate religion would have you believe that the first of the monotheistic religions, which is Judaism, there are others that followed, the first of the monotheistic religions, Judaism, taught to respect the wife and the woman. And so every week the man reads, who can find a wife of excellence? Her value far exceeds that of gems. The heart of her husband trusts in her, for he lacks no gain. She treats him with goodness, never with evil, all the days of her life. She seeks out wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is still night, gives food to her household and sets out the tasks for her maids. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings she plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and flexes her arms. And it goes on. She opens her mouth with wisdom and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She watches the conduct of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise and acclaim her. Her husband, and he praises her. Many daughters have done worthily, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is naught. A God-fearing woman is the one to be praised. Give her praise for her accomplishments and let her deeds laud her at the gates. Now, compare that to Jersey Shore. Compare that to the skanks whose faces are a total reflection of the Dorian grayness within. The skanks say it all. The face of the skank says it all. Take a look at our society and what it glorifies. The skank, the falling over drunken skank, is held up as a role model. Now compare it to what is taught in the holy books to very religious Jews who read this every day or every week to glorify the wife and the woman. And now compare that to the psychopaths on the left who, when they say, I'm a Jew, and I'm a socialist, and I'm a lesbian, and I'm for the mosque, don't even know what they just said. They haven't any idea what they just said. And these are the people who hate the patriarchy. They hate the very religion that gave them their sustenance. And they hate it. They don't even know what they hate because their brains were warped at a very young age in the colleges, in the hate literature, the deconstructionist hate literature that said everything religious was bad. And now suddenly they're embracing Islam, which does not respect women at all. Although, maybe I am wrong. Maybe I don't know as much about the religion as Mayor Bloomberg does. Can anyone listening to this show who is a Muslim or a comparative religion scholar call this show and read to me a passage in the Quran which glorifies women? I'd like to know of it if it does exist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I don't know. This is it. This is talk radio. It is what it is. You could do anything you want with it. And you can just do politics. You can do religion. You can do poetry. You know what I think I'm going to do going into the new year? It's funny because to me, September is always the beginning of the new year. It's like still childhood. You know, the summer's over. Like the year really begins for me September. I think that beginning in September, I am going to do a sort of like a religious thing on Friday a little bit. One religious reading. On Thursday, maybe I'll do a nutrition segment. Wednesday, I'm going to do a finance segment. I think I'm going to try and do more of those, you know, like days of things, because it'll break the week up better for me and for you. I don't know, something along those lines. In that Friday, of course, is the end of the week. It's a holy night for Jewish people as a Sabbath, and then the Muslim people find Friday is the Sabbath is Friday for the Muslim people, right? Yeah. And the Christians who are Orthodox and still believe in it, the Sabbath is Sunday. So coming around, the weekend was meant for prayer. The weekend was not meant to go golfing. I mean, if you do, fine, but actually the whole object of the weekend was to bring you to a higher level within yourself. If you find it with a golf ball, good luck to you. You and Larry David have something in common, and you'll wind up on the same plane in heaven. Yasser in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Savage. Conservative for 10 years listening to you. I would like to share the comment that just answering your question before the break. And yes, there is three instructions at least how to treat mothers and wives decently. I'm a married, and I treat my wife and my mom the best I can.
Anyway, you're saying as a Muslim, you have found within the Quran a respect for women. And where is that found? What section is it? Give the people the number and the area.
I'm driving now, so this actually...
Fair enough. I'm not here to put you on the spot because your call was meant in peace, and I accept it in peace. Thank you. In other words, your religious teachings teach you to respect your wife and children, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely. And
so explain to a non-Muslim like myself, Yasser, why is it that the Islamists treat women so contemptibly? Where do they get that from?
It's a tribal system that they need to get out of it. And its tribal system, unfortunately, is managing a lot of that part of the world, which is the Middle East and Afghanistan.
Why is the tribal system of Islam now dominating the discussions that we are having about Islam and Christianity and Judaism? How is it that throwbacks from the 9th century are suddenly so dominant on Earth that we're listening to their view of the world? How is this happening?
It's actually tribal for even Christians and Druze. It's all the same problem. It is very, very, like thousands of years of traditions that it needs patience and training and teaching and openness. People like us who traveled around the world, we need to bring back these like updating of thoughts. It's, believe me, it's nothing to do with religion because all the three major religions.
All right, so what you're saying is it has nothing to do with the actual religion. It has to do with the tribal view of religion, which is stuck 1,000 years ago, in essence.
Yes, Dr. Fassad.
All right, so you have just confirmed that a man can learn from, who is wise, a man who learns from every man. So I hope that I've learned from you, and people listening to the show have learned something more about the religion of Islam as opposed to the fiction of Islam as being prophesied by the false prophets of the tribal aspects of the religion and those who push the Wahhabi aspects of Islam, which again are an 18th century view, a very extremist view. The only hope for the world, by the way, as I can tell, this debate within the world or this conflict within the world, the only prayer is the Muslim woman. Only if the Muslim women around the world finally stand up and revolt against these throwback 13th century or 9th century men who treat them like chattel can the world hope to be saved from this tribalism that threatens to engulf us in a new Holocaust. And I use that term generically, not specifically. Holocaust refers to a fire, incidentally, if you actually search for what the word means. It's not a specific word specific to the German Holocaust. The word Holocaust actually refers to a fire. A great conflagration is what it really refers to. So what would you like to do on a Friday like this? Where do you want to go? The news again. Again, Mayor Bloomberg and the comedian. What did I just say? The Ground Zero Mosque may get public financing. So now it's on the Drudge Report. Thank you, Matt, for listening to the show. No, it's a very important story that my producers found. And I'm glad that we had it. And now it's on a very important website. I'm not looking to get any credit. I didn't write the story. That's all. And we have the president, Pinocchio, is riding a bicycle and playing golf with Bloomberg, the other Pinocchio. They played golf together. And last week I saw the head of the CIA on a cooking show, tasting some souffle. That was really encouraging. That gave me a tremendous sense of courage, because especially since when Leon Panetta was picked to head up the CIA by Pinocchio, we were told it was a great conflict, remember? He had no training in security at all, nothing. They picked him from a college in Monterey, California, where probably he majored in eating calamari. And because he was a Democrat operative and a good friend of Nancy Pelosi, he was made the head of the CIA to make sure that they didn't look at anything done by the Democrat government too closely. Say, oh, come on, he doesn't have any background in defense or security, but it's all right. No, the way he's on a cooking show. And he looked just like Peter Sellers. God bless him. I'm sure he's a nice man. All I know is that everyone I talk to fears that one day we're going to wake up to smoldering cities because of all of the Neros that are fiddling as America sits there waiting to burn. That's not a bad sentence. Most intelligent people I know fear that we're going to wake up to smoldering cities because all of the Neros are fiddling while America is about to burn. Now, that's not a parable as much as it is a description. And is it a prognostic a description? I hope not. I hope it's just a fantasy based upon irrational fears. But then again, we never know. We never know. We see that a British spy was found dead in the street, dead in a trunk this week. Oh, boy, there it is. There it is. The British spy was found, MS, or the MI5, whatever. I don't know if that's the name of the highway or the Secret Service in England, but they're about the same today. They're more concerned with the citizens who would defend their own country than they are with the people who want to overturn their own country. But anyway, the British spy is found dead, and you read on the story, he was a transvestite, found dead in the trunk, and with women's clothing found in his apartment. You say, well, what does that have to do with anything? It's his lifestyle choice. He should be allowed to do what he wants. It makes no difference. Well, there was a time that it made a difference. It was a time that if you had certain proclivities, you weren't hired for intelligence agencies because they knew you could easily be blackmailed in nightclubs and such. Oh, that's nonsense. That's not diversity. That's not the modern world. No. We don't need people who have nobility of spirit. After all, what is nobility of spirit? It could be anything. How dare you suggest that this is not a noble way for a man to behave? It's not a noble thing. It's as noble as anything else. As noble as having 5 children and going to church every Sunday. That's right. And they're certainly just as good in that behavior as any man who has fought in a war. There's no in fact, a man who fought in a war is probably higher risk than a man who dresses up as a woman and winds up in a trunk. And that nonsense from the mid-century nonsense should be thrown out the window. We're living in a new world order. Yeah, okay, well, you see it your way, I see it mine. And that's why I said that I had to do certain things that I did, so... 1-800-449-825, Michaels, and 14 murders in Acapulco. Oh, my God, that just came up on Drudge. What's going to happen with Mexico? I think we have to pull the troops out of Germany and put them on the border with Mexico very soon. Something tells me there is going to be a narco state takeover of Mexico. Then what's going to happen? Do you think that the Mexican government is strong enough to withstand what is going on from within its own country? I don't know, but if you play this chess game out, it's very worrisome.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Summertime. It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg went on the show of a third-rate comedian after he defended the Ground Zero Victory Mosque at a Ramadan dinner. On this so-called comedian show, he said that porno shops were part of the vibrant community of New York City. Do you understand yet why I've called Bloomberg mentally disordered and out of touch with reality? A film student who worked for a liberal group attacked and stabbed a Muslim cab driver in New York City. Yet the empty skirts in the media are claiming that this is the result of hatred stirred up by the mosque. Do you fear that this attacker was actually an agent provocateur sent in by the libs to stir up support for the mosque? I don't know that this whole story is the whole story. It seems that every day new sound bites are coming out from Imam Rauf in which he attacks the United States. He's been exposed as a radical who hates America. What do you fear his next tactic will be once he returns to the United States to try to get this Victory Mosque built? Might he demand that Obama claim the site for the mosque by eminent domain? A school has banned the singing of Happy Birthday because it might be insensitive to some students who might find singing in public offensive because they can't sing. The ban was later lifted in the face of public outrage. How can liberals with mental disorders this advanced be treated? Is there a medication? Or in fact, is this show, The Savage Nation, the best therapy? Here are some of the headlines that you're not going to believe. I'll just read them to you cold. Bloomberg to headline fundraiser for Reid. Let me read that again. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who was once a Republican, then an independent, now is going to headline a fundraiser for Harry Reid. Now, not only does this not make sense politically, but Reid recently broke with the mayor and Obama and said that the planned mosque near Ground Zero should not be built. It's amazing to me. While Bloomberg is one of the project's strongest defenders and has attacked anyone who opposes the plan in the worst terms. Islamic extremists in the workplace. Defense Secretary Gates ignores the homegrown Muslim threat. It's a big story, and it is on my website. Voters now trust Republicans more on all 10 key issues. Tick tock, tick tock. An immigrant who voted illegally is on the road to becoming a U.S. citizen. Good, no, he may be president one day. New antibiotics developed from frog skin. Great. Let's all fast during Ramadan, says the Washington Post. Isn't that interesting? And that would save money, would be good for carbon. Would that be good for carbon? And it'll reduce global warming and understanding from shared experience, says a Catholic. Well, I would say go the next step and have all of America convert to Islam in order to bridge interfaith gaps. Wouldn't you think that would work?
That's the next step.
Recession may have pushed the United States birth rate to a new low. This is frightening. Because if you actually look at the birth rate in the United States, especially amongst European Americans, it's not even at replacement level. But if you look at the birth rates amongst Muslim immigrants, wow.
For some reason, the economy isn't affecting them. Strange.
No. There was an interesting article on Islam's achievement gap. That's because Obama told us on how Islamic contributions were so important to the history of the world, and Bloomberg talked about how Muslims were there at the beginning of New York. I didn't know any of this. You see, I only have a PhD, but I never learned this. What actually I did learn is that Muslims represent 25% of the planet's population, more than 1 billion people. And yet, how many Muslims have been Nobel Prize winners for science? Just two. That's two prize winners and more than a billion Muslims. Now, let's compare that to the contributions made by Jews. Though representing only 0.2% of the world's population, Jews have won a quarter of all Nobel Prizes awarded in the sciences. That's interesting. Well, it's biased. It's biased, I guess, and I guess if you believe in reality, it's biased. I suppose if you're It's unbelievable. The entire Muslim world, constituting one-fifth of humanity, contributes barely 1,000 research articles out of 100,000 science books and 2 million research articles published annually. And while the West has an average of 3,000 science PhDs per million in its inhabitants, the number of member countries is so dismally small that not even the statistics are available amongst the Arab nations.
It's got to be a Zionist plot.
The 57 predominantly Muslim countries have about 23% of the world's population, but less than 1% of its scientists, who generate less than 5% of its science and make barely 1% of the world's original research discoveries each year. That's quite an achievement. Tell that to Obama and Bloomberg. Mainstream media pundits are saying to America, get over 9/11 and just forget it. Here's another one. Environmental Protection Agency are considering a ban on lead ammunition. How do you like that one? I guess they're going to put balsa wood in there, huh?
Tell it to China.
A federal law making it a crime to lie about receiving the Medal of Honor or other military decorations violates freedom of speech, a radical left-wing federal appeals court ruled. Although there was a man who faked it and said that he had received the Medal of Honor, the 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals in San Francisco said that he has the freedom of speech to lie about the Medal of Honor. So there it is. That's the kind of judges that you have in that city of San Francisco. Judge Mylon Smith said in the majority opinion. Dissenting Judge Jay Bybee said the Constitution does not protect knowingly false speech. He said the lies about the Medal of Honor told by Xavier Alvarez dishonor every service member who has been decorated in any way and every American now serving. But the liar, Alvarez, elected in 06 to the Three Valley Water District Board in Pomona, introduced himself at a public meeting in 07 as a retired Marine who was awarded the Medal of Honor two decades before. And so he was called forth on this, and he was prosecuted under a 2006 federal law that prohibits falsely claiming to have won a military decoration. Pled guilty, sentenced to probation, but his verminous left-wing lawyers appealed it. Jonathan Libby, a deputy public defender who represented the faker Alvarez, said that the Ninth Circuit upheld the First Amendment in a very difficult case. So that's the world you're living into now. So the government now has lost the Stolen Valor Act. And so that means that, well, I guess Nancy Pelosi can claim she's a Medal of Honor winner. Bill Clinton could claim he actually was in the military when he bombed Serbia into the Stone Age. He can claim that he was actually on the ground forces. It was landed by a C-47, parachuted in. And so therefore we no longer have heroes. The reason we no longer have heroes is because the vermin, rat, left-wing, scum, communist, socialist bastards don't want you to have real heroes. They want you to think that the deviant pervert in the ACLU is equal to the boys dying and fighting in Afghanistan. That's why they just took down the Stolen Valor Act. That's the country you're now living in. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm so young and you're so old. This, my darling, I've been told. I don't care just what they say, 'cause forever I will pray.
You know, the crazy, egotistical Mayor Bloomberg. What are they calling him? Mayor Gloomberg? Mayor Gloomberg went on a show with a comedian last night who doesn't even write his own lines. And here is the result.
You have spoken out very eloquently in favor of people being able to do what they're able to do on private property. Is that your feeling?
When I went to school, we studied the Constitution. It says you have a right to say what you want to say, which means pray to whomever you want, whenever you want, wherever you want. And it's just not the government's business to tell you what to say. That's what's great about America. And people say, well, in Saudi Arabia, you can't build a church. Yes, that's the difference between Saudi Arabia and America.
The result of this conversation is that you can see why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. Not only does the comparison as a joke not make sense, where that idiot says, oh, I was thinking that he would like to build a synagogue in St. Patrick's Cathedral. Now, first of all, there's no logic in this joke. It's not funny. It's the product of imbecilic inbreeding. There's nothing more to be said.
Whether you like a mosque or don't like a mosque, you don't have to go. There's already another mosque down there within four blocks of the World Trade Center. There's porno places. There's fast food places. I mean, it's a vibrant community. It's New York.
Did you hear this? That porno places are part of the vibrant community? This is a madman. I believe Bloomberg is genuinely a madman. Listen.
Because I was thinking, and again, I don't know if you're going to support this or not, I would like to build a synagogue reform in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
I think if you talk to the Archbishop, he might be amenable to that. He said that he wants to bring people together. He wants to find another place for the mosque.
All right.
Maybe he'd find another place for your temple.
A synagogue inside a church? Are they implying that the Jews blew up a church and now they should build a synagogue there? Look, these people have a medical condition. It makes no sense.
There's nothing new here. The difference is we're in election season. And this whole issue, I think, will go away right after the next election. This is plain and simple. People trying to stir up things to get publicity and trying to polarize people so that they can get some votes. And I don't think that most of these people who are yelling and screaming really care one way or
another.
You're
wrong. They do care. They do care. Most of America cares. Yet the little billionaire goes on.
The family members, they do care. And the family members that I've talked to, and I'm chairman of the board of the World Trade Center Memorial, 100% in favor of saying these people, if they want to build a mosque, can build a mosque. The lives of our loved ones were taken because the right to build a mosque or to say what you want to say was so threatening to people. I think
position.
I should speak out even more if I were running for re-election, because I think the public wants people that what they want people to say, candidates to do, is say what they believe. They want people to be genuine, even if they don't agree with them. And I think, you know, saying one thing today and a different thing tomorrow is not exactly a great way to build a career, and certainly not good government.
And here's your peaceful imam named Ralph attacking the U.S. once again.
The definition of terrorism. The military historian, the American military historian Caleb Carr, in his excellent book called The Lessons of Terror, defines terrorism as the targeting of civilian non-combatants in order to achieve specific political objectives. And he points out that every country in the world has done this from the time of the Romans. The perception in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, is that Western states have engaged in this definition of terrorism, that the desire to have or to achieve certain political objectives has made them allow or made them not feel troubled by the loss of innocent Muslim lives, calling it, you know, damage collateral to their political objectives.
I went to a religious service. Actually, it was a religious dinner before a service. I'm not into the service as much as the dinner. So I was there, and they had a group of young girls, 16, 17 years old, who were camp counselors in there. They were the sweetest young girls I had seen, and I whispered to Mrs. S. I said, I haven't been in a room with as many virgins since I was in junior high school. And she got a kick out of that one. They're all pure. These girls are not even allowed to date boys until they're ready to marry them. I don't know if you know anything about worlds like that. They're unlike children that you know who are encouraged to have sex in the first grade in the United States. They're given condoms in the United States in the first grade. These people live in another world. You might say a backward world, a Puritan world. I say God bless them. So as I said, I'm sitting there and I whisper to Mrs. S. I haven't been around as many virgins since junior high school. She got a real kick out of that one. She's not easy to make laugh. This one got a real roar out of her. Anyway, so I sat through the dinner, this and that. As I was leaving, I went over to the young ladies. And many of them, by the way, had grown up in New York listening to this show since the time they were 5, 6, 7 years old. Either their father had listened to it. They're not allowed to watch television, by the way, in this group. They cannot watch television because it's known to be such vile imagery that they're not allowed to watch. So I said, but you're allowed to listen to radio. I said, why? And they explained to the difference between radio and TV and blah, blah, blah. So they said, you know, I've been listening to you since I'm 8 or 5 or 7, and now I'm 17, and it's amazing to meet you and this and that. So they loved my voice. And I said, girls, I said very nicely, I said, you know, when you look around in the world, you see beautiful clothing, you see beautiful jewelry, you see beautiful cars, you see shoes that cost $5,000 a pair. You see the girls from Hollywood looking so elegant and so gorgeous. I said, but do you ask yourself why most all of them end up in alcohol or drug rehab and they can't even complete a course in alcohol or drug rehabilitation, that they're continuously in rehab? It's because their souls are screaming out for what you have. I said, you may not have the cars and the jewelry and the clothing, but you have something that those girls in America are dying for, and that's something that is forever lost to them, and that's God. I said, what you have inside of you is the kingdom of God is inside you, and I can feel it in them. I want to tell you, when you're around people who are really living that world, and I don't care what the religion is, when they are invested in God and God is invested in them, and I don't want to get too preachy, I'm just telling you, this is a fact of reality as sure as I'm sitting here. I know many of you are materialists and you can't even follow what I'm saying because you don't believe that the spiritual world exists or that it can exist. I see it when it exists. So I said to them, what you have inside of you is what they want, and they can't get it. And that's why they're always reaching to fill themselves with drugs or alcohol or partying or whatever. And that's all I said. Just remember that you have what they want. And I left it at that. I didn't say so, therefore, anything. Whether they really heard me, they're just young girls, I don't really know. I hope they did. I hope if they're listening to the show today that they recognize I was speaking from one soul to another.
Savage.
You've heard me talk with our next guest, Craig Smith, who is a chief advertiser on the Savage Nation for many years. And he's told you and me about the state of the economy. We keep hearing about double-dip recessions, depressions, possibly inflation. He joins us now to help explain what actually is going on with the economy and what he thinks we can do. Craig Smith, welcome back to the Savage Nation. We keep hearing mixed signals from the financial world that first we're in recovery, then we're in a depression. We may even be headed towards a double-dip recession. Nobody knows what this means. What's your opinion?
Well, Michael, we're definitely not headed for a double-dip recession. I think we're headed for far worse than that, quite frankly, Michael. The world economy may very soon accelerate into what I consider to be a precipitous decline, making 2007-2008 look like child's play. Because really, when you think about it, Michael, the world economy has had trillions and trillions of dollars, printed dollars, by the way, that have no value, pumped into it to give us the sugar high. And did it make the GDP in America turn around a little bit? Yes. Did it stem the bleeding over in Europe? Yes. But it hasn't created any jobs. It hasn't reduced budget deficits. And this is the typical result of the government. I mean, whenever the government has a problem, they throw money at it. Well, we don't have any money, Michael, so we're printing money.
Mm-hmm.
And this has always been their answer to problems. For the last 40 years, it's just if there's a problem, print the money. And we've got interest rates at zero. We now are going to have to go into quantitative easing. That's just a fancy way of saying the Fed's going to have to print massive amounts of money to cover Mr. Obama's $1.4 trillion yearly deficits. So, yeah, I don't think we're headed for a double-dip recession, Michael. I think I could make the argument in a report we put together that we are in a depression, and it may end up in a hyperinflationary depression.
Well, you say a depression, but that's a pretty strong word. Why would you and others be suggesting we're there?
If you look at the raw data, if we take all the politics and all the emotions out of it and just look at the raw data, you'll see something very interesting, Michael. A major part of the growth we have seen in America and throughout the world over the last 100 years, especially the last 40 years, let's say, since Mr. Nixon closed the gold window in 1971, it has been built on unsustainable levels of debt. We now know in America that we have somewhere between $59 and $110 trillion worth of debt. And if you look in the last 100 years, this unprecedented growth in production, in inventions, in technical developments, leading to some major increases in our standards of living in America, have all been based on debt, Michael. And that's why it's kind of like if you and I went out and used our credit cards to live a big high life, it looked like we're rich, but when the bill came due, we wouldn't be so rich. So what we have happening right now, in my opinion, is systematic stealing from the American people.
So all the growth we've seen over the last 40 years is a result of printing money and increasing debt with nothing to back it?
That's correct. Let me give you some statistics, Michael. Back in 1971, we had $9 trillion worth of debt. Between 1971, and I'm leaving out unfunded mandates like Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. In 2010, we have $59 trillion worth of debt. That's corporate, personal, and governmental debt. Now, we had an increase of $50 trillion over that 40-year period in debt. We used to have an economy that had a GDP of $1 trillion a year. Today, it's $14 trillion a year. So we spent $50 trillion in debt to get us an economy that produces $14.5 trillion a year. If you were to take that debt out, Michael, I could make the argument that we have had 39 years of negative growth. And what has happened is this government has been systematically stealing from people.
Wait, this is not believable to me. I mean, it's hard for me to believe it. You say the government is stealing money from the average American? How did they get away with it?
Well, it's pretty simple, Michael. Let me give you a perfect example. Let's say you're a fellow that's out there working for $40,000 a year. I mean, money is supposed to be a medium of exchange. I go and give you 40 hours a week for 52 weeks, and you give me a paycheck for $40,000 at the end of the year. So I have traded my labor for an annual wage. Now, the government, on the other hand, can push one single button in a computer and create $40,000. There's no labor that was involved. All they had to do is press a button. Paper money that we originally used in this system, Michael, has completely lost its function as a medium of exchange or a store of value. That's why what you've seen happening in the gold market, which, by the way, I commend you, Michael, you've been telling people for 10 years to get involved in gold, and people that took your advice, especially when it was back down at $285, have done incredibly well considering it's $1,235 today. But that's why gold has been gaining and will continue to gain value against this perishing paper that we call money. The paper that we use today is really not money.
Why do you say that?
Michael, money has to have four characteristics. It has to be portable. It has to be divisible, it has to have a store of value, and it has to be scarce. Well, our money today is portable, it is divisible. We have $1 bills, $10, $100 bills. But does it represent a store of value? Well, it is a store of value, but it's declining. That's why a new car that used to be $3,000 is today $30,000. But most importantly, is money scarce? And the answer is no, it's not scarce. We have computer blips now. As long as there's trees and ink out there, we can create more money. It's not scarce. Therefore, we are using a money substitute, much like saccharin is for sugar. And if a diabetic needs sugar to get out of a diabetic shock, I hate to break it to you, saccharin won't get the job done.
Craig, there's a lot of talk coming from the Fed about deflation. Others are saying inflation. What is this about?
I'm absolutely convinced on this, Michael, and you're one of the very first programs that I've said this on, and I'm going to be doing this on other interviews. I'm absolutely convinced we are not only headed for inflation, we're headed for hyperinflation, and let me give you the reason why. And I've put this all in a report, so this is not just something I've come up with. I mean, I've got facts and figures and charts to back this up with. If you look at the government response, the only thing they know how to do is print and spend money. It's the only thing they know how to do, Michael. And that being said, we may have some short-term deflation right now because we've seen a little bit in the housing prices, and we're experiencing that currently. But it's a prerequisite for hyperinflation. The fear of a deflationary implosion always forces government to do the one thing they know to do, and that's to print money. And that ends up leading to currency collapses, which historically have always been the causes of hyperinflation. So if you look historically, Michael, and I know you love history, and you look at these same things that the Obama administration is doing today, and quite frankly, were started under Bush and Mr. Paulson, when they were done in the past in other countries, it led to hyperinflation. Most people remember Weimar Germany. You know, wheelbarrows full of German marks to go in and buy a loaf of bread.
Well, sure, okay.
Well, what people don't understand is that in hyperinflation, you can keep people working because the currency is so devalued, your goods and services are cheaper in other parts of the world. However, hyperinflation wipes out the hard work and savings of the population while helping the government. Think about it. The government would just love to print money to buy things. It always costs the people. And Germany recovered from the hyperinflation in 1923. I mean, look at Germany in the 60s and the 70s, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, Solingen Steel. They're one of the strongest economies of Europe. But the people in Germany and Weimar Germany were wiped out. And that's why I'm so encouraged that you allow me to be with you today, Michael, to tell the American people you need not be wiped out if we go through this inflation, this hyperinflationary cycle that I see coming.
Well, at the end of the day, what can the average person do with all of this going on to protect themselves?
Number one, you need to educate yourself. Number two, You need to reduce your debt. And I'm proud of America right now. Most American people are paying off their credit cards. They're reducing their consumer loans. They're not falling prey to this government to go out and take a new loan out to buy a car, this or that. The cash for clunkers we're seeing now totally failed. Number three, you need to diversify your assets in your savings accounts, your college accounts for your children, your 401ks, your IRAs, your KEOs, your retirement plans. You should have somewhere between 2 and 20% in gold, and then the rest in blue chip stocks, some bonds, some cash, some mutual funds. Be well diversified. And number four, be prepared to reassess your expectations as it relates to market returns. Traditionally, we've seen 8 to 9% returns in the market. And then in the end of the 90s, beginning of 2000s, we got 15, 16, 20% returns. Everybody thought we were going to get rich until we had the dot-com bust. We better expect the next 3 to 5 years to be zero to negative growth, and the government responding to that by printing trillions and trillions of dollars. Michael, the Fed has had zero interest rates. They have tripled their balance sheet. They now have a $3 trillion balance sheet. We still have unemployment at 10%. We still have an anemic economy, and by no stretch of the imagination are we in recovery right now.
How can the Savage Nation find a more in-depth analysis of what you just told us here on the Savage Nation?
Well, Michael, I've done two things. Number one, on our website at SwissAmerica.com, I have a special icon there that's marked for the Savage listeners. If you click onto it, it will show you how to get a complete copy of this analysis by Egon Greyertz. Or you can give us a call at 800-289-2646, 1-800-289-2646. Mention you're a member of the Savage Nation. You'd like to know whether we're headed for recession, depression, inflation, deflation. And I'll assure your listeners of this, Michael, if they will take a half an hour to read this analysis, they will see something they don't see in the mainstream media. You know, I was thinking about this just as we're coming to the close of this interview, Michael. I'm thinking about it. Everybody's turning to Barack Obama for the answers. Everybody's turning to Gordon Brown for the answers. And you and I both know how we feel about Gordon Brown, Michael. And let me tell you something. They don't have the answers. The only answers they've ever had is more government interference.
Exactly.
Well, let me tell you something. Little do they understand, Mr. Brown and Mr. Obama, that their interference, each regulation, each dollar or pound or euro that they print to supposedly fix this problem is merely exacerbating the problem on a worldwide economic basis, and they need to stop. The American people can work ourselves out of this. The Europeans can work ourselves out of this if the government... See, Michael, I'm convinced that government intervention and government printing of money has created the exact problems we're dealing with today. How do they want to address it? By printing more bad money. It's not going to work. It'd be no different than you having bugs in your house and putting bug spray down. It didn't work, so you just shot more bug spray down. No, ultimately, you're going to tox the house out. We've got to change directions, Michael, and hopefully... programs like the Savage Nation that are offering alternatives to people will get a conversation going in Washington, D.C., where we stop printing money.
Craig Smith, thanks for the information and for being on the Savage Nation.
And Michael, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I appreciate so much what you, the network, and the Savage Nation do to make America better.
Well, you've just heard from Craig Smith, a great supporter and advertiser on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Because of what I'm putting down, baby, I'm still a handyman.
How would you find summer? How would you find summer? It's an interesting, whoever wrote that copy, it's good. Like, you know, will it be hiking in a high mountain? I would like to go canoeing, for example. I have a big boat and a little boat, but it's been so windy and cold out here, I don't even go out on the boat here. It's like Arctic Circle. It's like the Bering Sea. I expect to, like, you know, they get the deadliest catch every time I go out in San Francisco. All I need is a crab thing, like, on the deck. I do like to go out even on the bay in a cold day, but enough is enough already. I like one summer day. It's unbelievable to me. I'll go out this week in the Arctic outfit I'll put on. But I would like to go up to, like, a lake in the, they have like in the Gold Lake area in Northern California. It's so unbelievably beautiful. But you know why I'm gun shy, why I won't go canoeing? Because I know I won't have peace. I know there's going to be a dingbat on the land with some ATV with making noise. And another moron in the lake with another speedboat. What's the point? Where can you go to get away from it? Where do they have a lake where you can't have noise today? I don't even know where that is. Is there such a thing? Maybe I should buy a private lake. Become a real lunatic. Everything private. Then you want people. Who can live alone in a lake? It's horrible, you and the loons. That's why they call you going loony. The point is I like to walk in the streets of San Francisco anonymously and get lost in a crowd. I'm at my most happy. If I could ever say I'm happy at all, which I can't, because I'm not a happy man, I'm not ashamed to admit it either. I don't think there is such a thing as happiness after childhood. Maybe in childhood there's happiness if you're a lucky kid, you're healthy, and you have nice parents. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You could be happy. And then maybe, again, you could be happy in your old age if you are healthy and you have enough Viagra. Okay, I could see that. But basically, human beings are not happy. Happiness is not there for you. You know, you can pursue it all you want, but you ain't going to catch that fish. It's an illusion. That's the whole game. But the fact of the matter is there are moments of joy or slight moments of happiness in a person's life, a child's birth, a wedding, things of that nature. But you don't walk around happy. What are you, a moron? What man walks around happy? I don't understand. What does that mean, walk around happy? But I'm at my most content, that's as close as I come to the herb word happy, when I am, let's say, on a cold summer's day in an overcoat in San Francisco, walking in a crowd down on Union Square, seeing tourists shiver. Ah, is this not happiness? Now, this goes back to my lauding the great book, The Importance of Living by Lin Yutang, which is not as great as my book, Trickle Up Poverty, but in its own day, he did the best he could. I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com. Well, you look how we've gone from ravioli to bologna in one generation. It's disgusting. It really is. Let's play some music. Figlia mia, ascoltare pare. Oh! Sette figlio.
Ebbene.
Manatena.
Se cingappa la fantasia dei pesciuli a la la
la la la la la la la. Everybody sing. Hey, gumba, wait, gumba. From ravioli to bologna in one generation. Here's the second stanza.
C'è una luna, la luna mezza mare,
marinare. Figlia mia,
mamma mia,
pensa tu.
Se te piglia lo polizia, isso vai, isso viene, sembra scoppetta manatena.
I love this language, it's a beautiful language. Just
se
cingappa
la fantasia di scoppettia, vecchiuzza
mia. How are you going to order shrimp scampi after the Gulf, the Gulf spill? It's going to be off the menus. No more shrimp of this, shrimp of that. The big part of the menu, I turn it off. Think all of the Italian menus are going to have to be changed in America. No more shrimp scampi, no more shrimp this. The shrimp is gone. That's why I was playing Lazy Mary, You Better Get Up. She answered back, I am not able. Lazy Mary, you better get up. We need the sheets for the table. Lazy Mary, do you smoke in bed? There's only one man you should marry. My advice to you would be is to pay attention to me. You better marry a fireman. He'll come and go and go and come. Play it again. I think the people want to hear music instead of Obama and Pelosi. I mean, what are you going to do? You don't want to hear it. I turn it off. They don't want to hear it. They heard it already. I already played this for all it's worth. Well, you want to hear it or not? You want to hear it. All right, one more time. Some do and some don't. One more shot. He says marinara, it should be maritara. What's he singing about, shrimp, or is he singing about a sheet on a bed here? What's he singing about?
Second stanza.
Second stanza. Papalon Casadice. Turn it off already. I remember when I was a little kid, some of the Italian guys in my father's neighborhood, they knew I used to like cowboy outfits, and I used to always have the two cap guns. They'd come up to me, and the Italian guys would look with a big smile. They love children. All these guys love children as opposed to today where they molest children. You know, you could trust the men to take care of a child. If anyone looked at them wrong, they'd cut their throat. They come up to me and they say, hey, a little hop along, Casadice. I didn't know what they were talking about. It was so funny. What fun we had. But it's a different world. You knew you were protected in the neighborhood. It didn't matter what race or religion. The men were all the same. They were protective of children. Look what we have today. Take a look.
Savage.